I'm Spencer Beckwith for KUNM. He has said that photography is a portal to activism and knowledge. Shubhankar Banerjee is an internationally known writer, environmental activist, and scholar. He is also an extraordinary photographer. Several of his large-scale photographs of Arctic Alaska are now on view at the UNM Art Museum. Professor Banerjee chairs the university's Land Art of the American West program, and he is with us now. Shubhankar Banerjee, welcome.
Thank you, Spencer, for having me.
Many people's assumptions about the Arctic, its supposed emptiness, are going to be challenged by these photographs. Was that one of your intentions?
That was, because politically, the pro-oil development politicians have described the place as flat, white nothingness, frozen wasteland of snow and ice, similar to how our desert right here in New Mexico in the Southwest often been described as a wasteland. So I thought art could be a wonderful visual language to challenge these perceptions. And I selected a motif very early on, which was color. So color for me is not a medium, but a motif through which various ecological relations can be highlighted. So that's what we are doing in the exhibit.
And one of the ways of looking at these photographs is the beauty of what I might call a monochromatic palette.
That's precisely right. So I started thinking very hard, how can I make a photograph with just one color, with two colors, with three colors? So you see white only, white and brown, white and blue, and so on and so forth. So it's built through that idea in mind, that the spare aesthetic, spare but still ecologically incredibly rich, both its biodiversity and cultural richness of the indigenous people.
Many of these amazing shots are aerial shots. How did you take these photographs?
They were taken from small airplanes. And it's crazy to have a Cessna and the entirely open door in minus 45 degrees with wind blowing at 60 miles an hour, 100 below zero wind chill. But what I was doing, I was spending an enormous time on the land, building an understanding and spending time with the indigenous people. And because of its flatness, aerial view is a way that I thought would be a good way to apprehend some of these. And also aerial way has a history that's how geologists scope out a place. That's how military generals scope out their battlefield. And in a way, a lot of my work is sort of like scoping out battlefields because it's the politics of oil and biodiversity and indigenous cultures coming together in this exhibit.
So part of the time that you spent on the land was determining what area you wanted to photograph from above.
That's correct.
As I said, these are large-scale photographs, 6x6, even larger than that.
8-9 feet.
Why large?
In this exhibit, you will see works that are very large, where you see more biological side. And then right juxtaposed to that, you will see small photographs of harvest, only 18 inches wide or something like that. And it's this juxtaposition of scale is what is important. It's not that one thing is large, the other thing is small, but how you bring scale together to create tension. Just the viewing distance, one will push you away to see it properly, one will bring you closer. There are political tensions going on, there are environmental history tensions, there are environmental justice issues. So all those things go on in such presentation of scales.
Some of the large-scale photographs I viewed online before I went to the exhibit, and seeing the large-scale version of the photograph, I saw a lot more detail. In fact, the detail that I think you wanted me to see.
So a lot of my work from an aesthetic and artistic point of view is about visibility. There are three things are going on in these large photographs. One is what is obviously visible. Then there are things in those photographs that are not that easy to see. And there are things that cannot be seen. So all of those three things are going on. What is easy to see, not that easy to see, and what cannot be seen. So having that large scale enables one to engage at a different way.
One of the important things that I didn't see until I saw the large-scale version of your photographs were caribou tracks. And there is one particularly striking photograph that is simply of caribou tracks on a coal seam. There are no caribou, simply tracks. And you have said that photographs are a way of telling a story. What might that photograph be telling us?
What that is doing is pitting ecology against geology, or political ecology against geology, meaning these caribou have walked over coal bed or coal seams that are visible on the surface for, who knows, hundreds, thousands of years, many millennia, to create those deeply etched tracks on the coal seams. It is the largest caribou herd in Alaska and one of the largest in North America. But right underneath their calving ground lies the largest coal deposit of North America, an estimated 4 trillion ton of bituminous coal that could potentially supply U.S. coal need for 4,000 years. But if you burn all that coal, of course, life on Earth would be dead long before then. But so what image like that is doing is juxtaposing political ecology on top of geology and encouraging us to see landscape in a different way, that it's not all for exploitation of fossil fuels resources, but thinking about the biological richness, thinking about the cultural communities. There are actually three different tribes from 40 communities depend on that caribou herd for their cultural, nutritional, and spiritual sustenance. So the image is kind of encompassing or alluding to many of these issues of ecology. And if you look at just on the other side of the wall, there is another one called Known and Unknown Tracks, where the bold seismic tracks are very bold and there are very thin caribou tracks. But as it ended up happening, the caribou tracks won over the bold tracks through collaborative environmental justice campaigns. So those tracks and traces are an integral part of my aesthetic strategy. And I use them as kind of, sometimes you see the animal and sometimes you don't. And through these tracks and traces, we highlight environmental justice, indigenous people who depend on these animals for, like I said, many millennia.
From a very young age, you were intrigued by making art, and the art led you to activism. What is the connection between making art and making a statement?
So for me, from the beginning, I have had no interest in art for art's sake. Not that that is not important. It is very important to have art for art's sake. It is very important to have mathematics for mathematics' sake, pure mathematics. I was actually a theoretical physicist, so I appreciate that. But for me, it's really increasingly as things like human-caused climate change, human-caused sixth extinction, and myriad other human-caused problems that are wiping out the ecological fabric of our planet, art, I feel, has a strong role to play in helping us change direction, in helping us to understand, apprehend, and then take action. So my art has evolved in that political space, because the area where I first worked was Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, one of the most biologically diverse places in the entire Arctic. It's in Alaska, and two indigenous communities, the Gwich'in and the Inupiat, depend on the biodiversity of that place. And yet, it is also the most politically debated place in the American history, public land-wise, because there is oil underneath that biological diverse place. So art for me and activism for me got enmeshed very early in my work, and they continue to be that way. So this exhibition, you see the first subtitle, the first text is, it says, Activism, Photographs, and Writing. So the two come together. All three come together.
It's obvious when one walks through this exhibit, there are two things going on. An artistic side, and there is an activist side. Are those two sides compatible?
It's not about compatibility. I do not ever, even in my visual work or in my literary work or activist work, it's not about creating harmony. It's about creating tension. And when we create tension, that's when I think art succeeds the best. So if you're just presenting a visual object, whether it's a migration of caribou, and we're just providing a text that just explains that, that's not doing anything. What the text does, it takes you into a different dimension that you may or may not have thought about. So there is a lot of text in that exhibit that I would encourage the viewers to also engage with, but it's not about harmony. It's about contradictions often. And what art and humanities enables us to do is hold these contradictions in place and engage with it, because we live in a world of contradictions. So it's about contradictions. That's what I'm interested in.
You have said that the text is not there simply as a description of the photographs, but as part of the art itself. What do you mean by that?
What I'm encouraging the visitors to do is not think about an art museum exhibit in a linear manner, meaning you start at the beginning and you go through the whole thing and you end at the end. What I'm encouraging is a networked experience, meaning you will come across a visual object or a text, even a word, even a term, and then you'll encounter it a little bit later in the exhibit. Then you'll encounter it again and possibly again. And this is going on throughout this modest space. So what it creates is a networked experience, and that's what ecology is about. It's a science of connection at its most basic. So this exhibit enables us to create such science of connections. And the reason we did that is the art museum director, Arif Khan, and I, one of our top priorities was to engage and encourage all departments of the university to engage with this exhibit, public all across New Mexico to engage with this exhibit, that they'll find something that they care about, whether it's environmental history, whether it's environmental law, whether it's public policy, American studies, Native American studies, biology, what have you. That's what we have tried to do in this modest space. So there is a lot of this networked reading that's going on.
You have said that growing up, one of the influences on you was filmmaking, and there are a lot of great Bengali filmmakers, for instance, Satyajit Ray. Could you talk a little bit about what his influence as a filmmaker was on you as an artist and as an activist?
I'm so glad you brought up Satyajit Ray. He's, of course, one of our greats. But it's not Ray. It's actually three of them. They were all contemporaries. Hrithik Ghatak is probably my most favorite filmmaker of all time. They were contemporaries. And Mrinal Sen. They all used their art to address social issues in many different ways. Ray was more subtle. Mrinal Sen was very direct. Ghatak was somewhere in between. Very poetic work, very engaged work. That's what I grew up with, because we had no money to really engage with so-called visual art like painting in a museum and things like that. We could spend very little money and go into a cinema and actually watch these what we used to call art films. And that had great influence on me to think about kind of the visual art as a means to address social and environmental issues. So these influences sometimes go deep inside you and you don't know when they might surface, but they do at some point.
And now you're a professor, presently at the University of New Mexico, but elsewhere previously, and you are perhaps influencing some young people in the same way these filmmakers influenced you.
That is my most important goal here at UNM. Now my career, wherever it is, it has arrived somewhere. My entire goal now is to work with our students across campus. Actually, this last spring, I just taught a class called Integrative Ecology and Social Transformation. I had 40 students from 15 different departments, and they amazed me how collaborative they are. In that class, we did so many wonderful things. Again, my priority is not just art students, though. It's bringing the university community together, because the crises we are dealing with are of such enormous proportion that art, humanities, science, everybody has a role to play, and the community. So my students engage very closely with our community via the Oro National Wildlife Refuge, right here in Albuquerque, Los Jardines Institute, right here in Albuquerque. So my priority is also right here in Albuquerque, even as we talk about the Arctic and India and other places.
Photographs of Arctic Alaska by UNM Professor Shabankar Banerjee are on view at the UNM Art Museum in Albuquerque. Long Environmentalism in the Near North runs through November 11th. Professor Banerjee, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Spencer.
For KUNM, I'm Spencer Beckwith.